It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
It is a colossal rescue effort. Thousands stranded, taken by boat and helicopter.
Water's so high, the boats are going over top of cars.
Saved using anything that floats. Their faces tell the story of anguish, anxiety, and fear.
The water was up to here. I walked out, and I was just, like, screaming. I seen somebody, they tried to put us on air mattresses. It didn't work. They had to put the babies on air mattresses. People were carrying babies on their shoulders.
With emergency responders overwhelmed, Houston Mayor Sylvester Turner is asking people to call 911 only if their life is in danger, as he defended his decision not to issue a mandatory evacuation order.
But I want to thank those thousands, in fact, millions of Houstonians who heeded the advice and did not get on the road.
The city has now opened its convention center for evacuees, as rescue teams plead for the public's help.
Those of you who have boats and high water vehicles that can be used in neighborhoods to help move people out of harm's way, we need your help.
And Houstonians have responded in mass.
You know, if they need my help, I'm going to do what I can.
This bayou is usually nearly empty. Within a matter of hours, it's 30 feet overflowing into these apartments, and all these people are trapped. While scrambling to save her mom from floodwaters in a nearby city, Samantha caught on a flooded interstate herself, climbing to safety.
My mom, she said that, like, there's water going in there, it's like 3 inches deep. Thought I could make it to the other side. But I didn't think it was that deep.
America's fourth largest city fighting to survive a still unfolding calamity.
All right, that's the report from NBC. And, of course, you're hearing that 24/7 from the news channels that you watch. The results of Hurricane Harvey, a Category 4 hurricane that hit Houston and surrounding areas. And many of you listening, of course, are residents of Houston. And I guess the first thing to say is just that we are praying for you, for your families. And if you are not, you're listening to me and you haven't been, then you need to, because it could be any of us at any time. We just have no idea how circumstances will unfold and what God will allow. I think I don't view storms and natural disasters as necessarily particularly used by God to punish or teach, but they are evidences of his power. There's no question about it. I think he's certainly capable. We know the scriptures teach that he uses natural disaster for his purposes. But I just think that, you know, it rains on the just and the unjust. And so we in our human understanding cannot impute any more meaning to it other than our brothers and sisters in Texas are suffering. And we have seen the hand of God, which no man can control. Don't tell me that human beings, you know, cause hurricanes. And don't tell me that we as human beings have the power to control our weather. So if there's any lesson to be learned from this, it's that. So just a few other stories about, just remarks about Houston, because they're in for some more rain. As you have been hearing, Harvey has not been able to leave the area. And so it's being, because of pressure, high pressures in other areas, it's kind of coming back. It's become a storm rather than a hurricane. But they're expecting a whole lot more water. I was pretty amazed when I read that something like a fourth of the Texas population, 6.8 million people in 18 counties have been affected by this, a fourth of Texas population. Then there are other things that I think are worth noting. This is just one story. You're hearing a million of them, but this one caught my eye. This is a story the AP has written. Tom Bartlett and Steve Craig pulled a rowboat on a rope through chest-deep water for a mile to rescue Bartlett's mother from her home in West Houston. It took them 45 minutes to reach the house. Inside, the water was halfway up the walls. Marie Bartlett, 88, waited in her bedroom upstairs. When I was younger, I used to wish I had a daughter, but I have the best son in the world, she said. In my 40 years, I've never seen the water this high. And then, of course, this is interesting to me. The AP is reporting this dispute between Governor Greg Abbott and the mayor of Houston. But they don't mention that the mayor's a Democrat, which I just think that's interesting. Remember how natural disasters are used as political pawns to prove racism, to create divide, because this is what the left does, find a good disaster and exploit it. So don't worry. They'll make something of this. They will cause trouble on this. But I think it is interesting, and even up front, AP is not mentioning that the mayor of Houston, who did not want to evacuate, while Governor Greg Abbott did want people to evacuate, one is a Republican, the other is a Democrat. The AP did not mention that, and because, you know why. Because it would not be to their advantage. Donald Trump is going to visit Texas on Tuesday. And by the way, the AP did point out that Governor Abbott, in spite of the fact that he was right about this in telling people to evacuate, and the mayor of Houston was wrong about that. That's Mayor Sylvester Turner, told people to stay in their homes while the governor said, get out. This reminds us, doesn't it, of Katrina? When the mayor, Ray Nagin of New Orleans, told people not to evacuate, he was told, get your people out, get your people out, and he didn't do it. Remember the buses that's acres? I don't remember, but there were bus after bus after bus after bus that was provided, and he didn't like those buses. So they didn't get people out. And so, but of course, the whole thing was twisted around to be George W. Bush's fault. And so I expect that's going to happen in some form or a fashion. But the point that the AP made that needs to be restated is that Governor Greg Abbott did not cause in the press conference, he did not point out the division between them, and he was very gracious toward the mayor of Houston, talked about how they're working together, did not point out that he had said, Governor Abbott had said, evacuate, but the mayor of Houston, Sylvester Turner, did not say. He told them people to stay in their homes, and we'll have to just assess later what the effect of that was. Good men can make different decisions, and I think Governor Abbott is right not to blame. I mean, it's self-evident. It will be, whether that was a good call or not. But it's no time to jump in and start arguing. And so they didn't do that. At least Governor Abbott, who could have done it, didn't do it. And God bless him for that. So we're in for trouble because the national health flood insurance, insurers will not sell flood insurance now. So we have a national program, the NFIP, the National Flood Insurance Program, that your tax dollars will rush in to pay for all of this. And the report is that the National Flood Insurance Program is already in debt $24.6 billion to the U.S. Treasury. And, of course, then they will rush in to pay the costs of this hurricane as well, and it'll have to come from the American Treasury, which is alarming. No, I'm not saying, look, don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying we shouldn't do it. I'm saying that we don't have money. We are running out of money. And there is a breaking point somewhere. I'm just not sure where it's going to be. It's going to happen suddenly, and I think the walls are going to fall down, and having no money will mean exactly that. No Social Security, no pensions, no anything. The money will be gone. And so this is just one more disaster leading us to that, literal and figurative. So anyway, that's what happened on that. Lots of things happened over the weekend. Let me give you, I think, some good news. Because you need it, right? And that is that the president on Friday signed an official order for the Pentagon to curb transgender military service. And the order basically ordered remember he tweeted this a few weeks ago, and the Pentagon issued some snarky response to it, and that they wouldn't be doing anything until they got official orders. So now an official order has come down. And it's ordering the Pentagon to drop plans to recruit transgender troops, halt their medical treatment, and determine within 6 months whether those currently serving can remain in the military. And so that's what's going to happen. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis is required to implement Trump's new transgender guidelines by March 23rd. So Now, here's the interesting thing. You've probably heard this. RAND Corporation did a study in 2016. And, of course, RAND Corporation was, you can't trust studies unless you know who's doing the study. Because studies can be made to show anything. And I guess the point I want to make is that they said that there is probably 1,300 to 6,600 transgender soldiers. And other groups have estimated the numbers as high as 15,000. But reading from Elaine Donnelly's report about this, and Elaine is with the Center for Military Readiness. She's a person I trust. She said The Hill, which is not exactly a right-wing rag. The Hill is not at all. It's a publication that's very central in Washington, D.C., has reported that only 250 persons requested transgender treatment since 2016, which leads you to believe that maybe those numbers are exaggerated. What do you think? So the President Trump has signed those orders and expect that that will go into effect. I don't see how they can stop it, even though I'm sure they will if they can. I know how they might stop it. They might stop it by impeaching the president, because as of today, a march has started in Charlottesville to Washington, D.C. I'm going to get into this just a little bit in more depth. But they are marching to the Capitol, and the goal is to they want to impeach the president. They want him out. They plan to march into Washington and occupy it. And they say nonviolent, but, you know, tongue-in-cheek. I'm not sure what that means. I'm going to read to you some of their instructions to their so-called protesters. I have to tell you that I was supposed to be in Washington at by the Washington Monument September the 9th for a rally for Act for America. And that's been canceled because there are reports of violence planned for the city. So it's a dangerous situation. These protesters, of course, are moving. Many of them were with Antifa, which is that, well, we're going to talk about Antifa today. What is it exactly? A-N-T-I-F-A. Where did it originate? Who are they? Who are the people behind those masks? Why are they allowed to do the violence they've been doing, whether it's in Berkeley or Charlottesville or other college campuses? Why have they been allowed to move about unrestrained? Why do we not know who they are? Why are we not stopping them? That's some questions we're going to be asking. And also, over this past week, this is important because I've talked about Sheriff Joe Arpaio. I told you last week that I'm a fan. I think he's a wonderful man. The president just pardoned him. It was a misdemeanor charge. He's accused of, you know, arresting people because he suspected that they were illegal, or stopping people because he thought suspected they were illegal. And they say that he ignored a court order. It is a political setup because they hate Sheriff Joe. Let me just give you his background here. He enlisted in the military at 18 after the outbreak of the Korean War. He served in the Army, became a police officer in Washington, D.C., in Las Vegas, Nevada. He served as a special agent for the Drug Enforcement Administration, which was formerly the Bureau of Narcotics. After 25 years of admirable service, he went on to lead the DEA's branch in Arizona. In 1992, the problems facing his community pulled Arpaio out of retirement to return to law enforcement. He ran and won a campaign to become sheriff of Maricopa County. Throughout his time as sheriff, Arpaio continued his life's work of protecting the public from scourges of crime and illegal immigration. Sheriff Joe is now 85, and after more than 50 years of admirable service to our nation, he is worthy, a worthy candidate for a presidential pardon. Well, you'd think the world is ending for the left, you know. They're shrieking, howling. Sheriff Joe's a racist, of course, because he wanted to enforce the law. Paul Ryan now has sided with the leftists, attacking the president's, President Trump's pardon of Sheriff Joe. It's just amazing. And so this is our Paul Ryan, the Republican Speaker of the House. He's also taking the power of the purse to stop the wall from being built. So that's Paul Ryan. Thank you, Wisconsin, for electing him again. And I'm going to talk about Antifa. We have a guest joining us who's an expert on it, Claire, my good friend Claire, whose name I can't remember, Claire Lopez. She's with Center for Security Policy, and Claire is the consummate professional researching these organizations and subversive groups. She's an expert on Islamic radicalism, and she will join us next to explain who in the world is behind Antifa. Stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
In America today, religious freedom, national borders, and even traditional gender roles are in peril. With all that's happening in our world, our nation is in desperate need of a return to conservative values. Hello, I'm Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of American Family Association. One of the best ways we can make a difference is with our vote. That's why each year the American Family Association is a sponsor of the Values Voters Summit to help increase cultural engagement. This year's Values Voters Summit will be October 13th through the 15th in Washington, D.C. The growing list of confirmed speakers includes people you hear on AFR like Ed Battagliano and Tawny Perkins, as well as Michelle Bachman, George Barna, Gary Bauer, the Benham Brothers, and more. The Values Voters Summit is sponsored in part by AFA Action. To learn more and to register, you can visit valuesvotersummit.org.
Here's Dan Celia with today's Stewardship Moment.
The faithful servant of Mary. You know, whatever was required of Mary, she was prepared to do. You know, God chose some pretty incredible people to do his work. Moses, Abraham, Elijah, Gideon, and Mary. The list goes on and on. You know, God has also chosen us. See, Mary adjusted her entire lifestyle to accomplish the awesome work of God. I wonder, are we willing to adjust our lifestyles to accomplish some of God's work?
You've just heard a Stewardship Moment with Dan Celia of Financial Issues Ministry, helping you plan, give, and invest wisely. For more information, log on to financialissues.org. That's financialissues.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Peter Koh, and I'm a business major, and this is my junior year at the college. What I love about the athletics here at Truett McConnell University is the coaches and their side of trying to teach sports from a biblical mindset with sportsmanship involved, and it really changes the way that you pursue the game, not just passionately doing it for other people, but also for yourself and to glorify God in that, which is completely different from most other schools.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
The American Humanist Association is defending an atheist teacher who told students that standing for the Pledge of Allegiance is optional. It happened at Indiana's Franklin Central High School. Physics teacher Dwayne Nickel told the Indianapolis Star he was reprimanded after he told students they did not have to participate in the pledge. Several parents complained, leading to a meeting between the teacher and school administrators. Mr. Nickel is known as a bit of a gadfly. Last year, the self-avowed atheist sued the local school district over pre-meeting prayers. He retired at the end of the school year. Two observations. First, parents should be commended for raising a stink over a teacher trying to indoctrinate their children. Second, Franklin Central High School should be commended for ridding the classroom of an unpatriotic atheist teacher. For more on this commentary, go to ToddStarnes.com.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
With a massive 10-day march now planned to start tomorrow from Charlottesville to Washington, D.C. to demand that President Trump leave office. Well, this comes after one person was killed in violent clashes in Charlottesville, Virginia. Despite President Trump condemning that violence multiple times, many on the left are still not satisfied.
Yeah, of course they're not satisfied, and we're going to talk about that. That was a little blurb from Fox News, because we are not hearing a lot about this, but you will be. In fact, I guess one of the blessings, if you can call it that, of the hurricane in Houston is that perhaps these anti-fa and protest movements who are marching from Charlottesville to D.C. starting today will not get as much attention. We could only hope. It's starting today. They're leaving Charlottesville. There's a whole instruction to those that want to be a part of this. A 10-day march from Charlottesville to Washington is set to begin Monday. It's called the March to Confront White Supremacy, because, of course, this is what this is about. This is, we have this outbreak, sudden outbreak in 2017 of white supremacy. That's what they think, and that's what they accuse all of us of. Anyone who wants to enforce the law, enforce the borders, even control health care, you know, we're racist. This has been the narrative for the last couple of years. So they say in their information to their participants, starting on September 6th, we're taking over Washington, D.C. We will hold our ground and launch wave after wave of nonviolent civil disobedience demanding Trump be removed from office and that an agenda he advanced that heals the wounds of white supremacy. That an agenda be advanced that heals the wounds of white supremacy. This will be a sustained civil disobedience campaign, so bring what you need to stay. And it goes on, it details, it says that they're going to stay at churches along the march. It talks about how their baggage and luggage will be transported with them. And there's a lot more to say about that, and I'm sure we'll get into it for the days to come. But one of the central organizers of this, central players in this movement to protest and to do violence, really, is Antifa, which is short for anti-fascist. But I'll stop with that, with my explanation, because Clara Lopez is the expert on this, not me. She's the vice president of for research and analysis at the Center for Security Policy. Claire, thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Hi, Sandy. Good morning. Thanks. Good to be with you.
Hey, one really simple question right up front. I've heard Antifa and I've heard Antifa. Do you know what the official pronunciation is for this group?
Well, I've heard that they put the emphasis on the first syllable.
Antifa.
Antifa, which doesn't sound right. It sounds kind of off, but I guess that's what they say.
So Antifa.
I guess.
All right. And you know, I just read you that little bit from that announcement, Claire, and they talk about how they're going to stop white supremacism as advanced by Donald Trump, but that really doesn't seem to be what we're seeing in terms of their goal, is it?
No, it's not at all, of course. I was just listening to you talking about this march coming up and, you know, all of the accommodations that are going to be made in terms of, you know, transportation of the individuals and transportation of their luggage and feeding and housing them. We're talking about a lot of money. That is going to cost, and then 10 days of it, that's going to cost a lot of money. The question we should be asking is, who's funding all this? Who's paying for all that? It's not the individuals themselves.
No, and Claire, it's not like the Tea Party where people are volunteers that sitting at their kitchen table organizing this march and all the churches and all the transportation. Well, this is a much bigger operation than the Tea Party ever had. And so do we have any idea who is funding this?
Well, of course, the name George Soros is always put out there. We know for a fact that George Soros publicly funds the Black Lives Matter movement and many other you know, leftist groups. But as far as the funding of this particular march goes, not so sure. But what I would point out is what we're looking at with this Antifa movement is that this is not something new. This is not even something American. In its foundation. It's European. It goes back to the 1920s in Europe, especially in Germany and Italy and Spain at that time, as communism was just rising up. Remember, this is right after the Russian Revolution. And the Nazis in Europe are also rising at that time, the 20s and the 30s. Their street thugs clashed on the streets, in particular, like I said, Germany, Italy, Spain. There were street battles between Nazis and communists in Europe pre-World War II. This movement today takes its name from them, anti-fascist or anti-fascist action maybe, but the core identity of the Antifa movement is Marxist, Leninist, and anarchist. And the idea is nothing to do with white supremacism. It's about tearing down our system, the American system of law and order.
Claire, let me interrupt you for a second, because I actually talked about this last week a little bit, and just to it's sort of hard for us to get our heads around all of this because even those of us that studied communism and Nazism, and the vast majority probably who never really did study those things, it's hard to discern, and I think we have to restate that the Nazis hated the communists hated the Nazis. And it was a war between control, it was over control. And when they were the communists were anti-fascist, the Nazis were called the fascists. And of course, the Nazis then burned down the Reichstag, which is the huge Capitol building, the beautiful building like our Capitol, and blamed it on the communists in order to turn the tide of opinion. I just wanted to put it in context. There was a war between them then, and interestingly enough, there seems to still be that conflict. So you're saying that Antifa is the communist faction.
Exactly. The roots of Antifa are Marxist, Leninist, communist, anarchist. That doesn't mean that every member or every thug on the street marching with them knows that or understands that. But the organizers do, the funders do. And at the top, a number of us really think and suspect that the funders of both sides, both the white supremacist side and the anarchist Antifa side, that the funders are funding both in an effort to cause chaos on our streets, to collapse our system, to break our system of law and order. And I would call your listeners' attention to two documents. They're not that long. One is Saul Alinsky. It was written by Saul Alinsky, called Rules for Radicals. This is a slim monograph, paperback. You can find it on Amazon easily. Rules for Radicals is the handbook, the little manual handbook for how to cause a society to convulse into collapse, really. And the other one I want to say is Al-Qaeda's 2004 online essay, never printed as far as I know in hard copy, only online, Management of Savagery. Management of Savagery. Those two blueprints, if you will, one from Saul Alinsky, who's a bona fide leftist, socialist, communist, anarchist, and Al-Qaeda, which, of course, is one of the Islamic terror groups of our time, both of them are talking about how to not just collapse society, but then take advantage of the savagery that results from the collapse of society in order to, on the other end of it, promote their own agenda. Now, of course, they're not the same, but the point is that right now, all these forces will join together to bring down America. Not saying they can succeed in it, but this is what they intend to do.
Hey, Claire, I'm going to drop in another story I just read this morning, which kind of proves your point. I don't know if you've seen this, but it's the report on Antifa moving to Philadelphia. I think it's Philadelphia. Yeah, Philadelphia. And it says they're calling for seizure of property and violence against cops. The Daily Caller is the one reporting this. It's calling itself the Revolutionary Abolitionist Movement. It's just launched a new cell in Pennsylvania. They have workshops which refer to Our Enemies in Blue. They're calling for violence against police, theft of goods, armed insurrection. They're being promoted by Antifa websites like Going Down, Sub.media, and Insurrection News. They're talking about things like how mosques are being ruthlessly bombed and how LGBTQ are being battered. And then it goes on to say that they praise Mumia Abdul-Jamal, the Black Panther activist shot and killed by a Philadelphia police officer, who shot and killed Philadelphia police officer Daniel Faulkner in 81. And then the point I want to make, though, is that it's modeled itself after the Rojava Revolution, a leftist guerrilla movement currently active in northern Syria, which kind of proves your point. It's the merger of those two movements.
It really is. And again, the signs that they carry sometimes are most revealing of all. The marchers, the Antifa marchers, often carry signs that say, make the U.S. ungovernable. That is their objective, bring about the collapse of American society. But let's look at what are some of its core elements of Antifa. They're active all over campuses in the United States now, the Campus Anti-Fascist Network. World Workers' Party, that's communist. It's going down, you just mentioned them. The Revolutionary Communist Party of the USA. Refuse Fascism, MoveOn.org, Occupy Wall Street, Redneck Revolt, John Brown Clubs, weapons training, that is, for the members. But associated with the Antifa movement are other groups, like Black Lives Matter movement, which itself is explicitly Marxist in its roots and ideology. And as I said before, Black Lives Matter movement gets funding from George Soros and other leftist foundations, too, like the Tides Foundation and Plowshares and others. The connecting element among these groups, though, and I really need to point this out, the connecting element or the bridge among them is the United States Council of Muslim Organizations, or the USCMO. That is an umbrella group of Muslim Brotherhood organizations in America, the most prominent one of which is CARE, Council on American Islamic Relations, Muslim Brotherhood front groups. And even though they are holding back, not taking the limelight, not in the spotlight right now in front of the cameras, these groups, the Muslim Brotherhood in America, USCMO, are very much connected specifically to Black Lives Matter movement, and through them, by extension to the other groups, we also know, for example, that the Secretary General of the USCMO, whose name was Usama Jamal, he's listed online among the top leadership of the Industrial Areas Foundation. That is Saul Alinsky's group, which is still active to this day. So get this. The top leader of the Muslim Brotherhood umbrella group in America is a part of the top leadership of Saul Alinsky's Industrial Areas Foundation.
You know, we have to interject something that we think people know, but I have to say it again, Claire, and that is with Saul Alinsky, who was, again, the author of Rules for Radicals, who studied the Chicago mob in order to learn their policies of how to enforce, how to cause trouble. He was not against violence. Hillary Clinton did her thesis. Saul Alinsky was a mentor to Hillary Clinton. And then after he died, Barack Obama also studied the Alinsky method. So people have to understand the danger of this time. So now you're saying that the Islamic radicals have now glommed on to the Alinsky movement. And we certainly see that. We see it playing out. We've seen it been playing out for the last several days and last several years. I also want to interject, you know, this Heather Heyer, who was killed in Charlottesville, I'm sure you know, Claire, that she was part of the International World Workers Party. So she was a communist. I'm not saying that I'm not inferring that, so therefore she deserved to be killed by, that's what people say, of course, that's the irrationality of the left. I'm not saying that anything that her life is less precious. That's not what I'm saying. My point is she was a member of the Communist Party, a young girl, who was there protesting. Claire, I think one thing we should clarify, maybe you can help this. From their narrative, Donald Trump and those of us that want to secure our borders, we'll just leave it with that for the moment, or want to fight back on Islamic terrorism, We are the fascists. We are Nazis. We prefer our race. That's the reason we want to secure the borders. So some people involved in this actually do have convinced themselves in looking at old films of Adolf Hitler that somehow Donald Trump is like Adolf Hitler. I would love to hear your response to that. Oh, look, you know what? Here, there's the music. Let's take this break. And let me give you take a good long breath and think about that. And when we come back, let's talk about, why Donald Trump might not exactly be like Adolf Hitler and why he's not a white supremacist, and what the proof is of that, and how this confusion is being generated. This is Sandy Rios. My guest is Claire Lopez. She's with the Center for Security Policy, and we'll be right back after this. Sandy Rios in the morning.
Pray for kings and all who are in high positions. that we may lead a peaceful and quiet life, godly and dignified in every way. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. Cabinet members are meeting for weekly Bible study in the White House. Regular attendees include Energy Secretary Rick Perry, Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, CIA Director Mike Pompeo, Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue, Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price, Vice President Mike Pence, and Attorney General Jeff Sessions. The group is sponsored by HUD Secretary Ben Carson, EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt, and Vice President Pence. Perhaps this explains the vicious, unrelenting hatred directed toward this president's administration.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Exploring the Word is all about Jesus, because Jesus is on every page of the Bible, but sometimes people don't see him.
Bert Harper of Exploring the Word.
So we're taking a microscope and finding Jesus in each book of the Bible. He's there. And Alex and myself on Exploring the Word, we're going to try to bring that out, and it will be a blessing.
Join Bert and Alex each weekday at 3 Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, friends. Michael Youssef here from Leading the Way. God has used the American Family Association in many incredible ways, and I am so thankful for their impact on this nation. Through the mission and the efforts of AFA, Christians have been given the tools that they need to stand firm for the truth. And I just want to say congratulations to the entire team as they celebrate 40 years of faithful ministry.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative.
1 million moms in association with American Family Studios introduces Ryan DeFrades' Secret Agent.
I'm Ryan DeFrades. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrades' Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming, sweetie!
She's an agent! Get her, boys!
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrades' Secret Agent. Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Order yours today at ryansecretagent.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. When National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster agreed to vouch for his predecessor's reliability in handling classified information, despite abundant evidence to the contrary, Susan Rice urged him to get rid of something called the Strategic Initiatives Group. That group was established by President Trump's former campaign chairman and chief strategist Steve Bannon. Its purpose was to provide the president with independent evaluations of such questions as what to do about the deteriorating conflict in Afghanistan, the threat posed by Sharia supremacists in America like the Muslim Brotherhood, and the defective Iran deal. One of its leading lights was Trump loyalist Sebastian Gorka, and it posed a threat to McMaster's anti-Trump National Security Council. Now Bannon and Gorka are gone, so we'll be the president's in-house supplier of second opinions. Susan Rice is doubtless pleased by General McMaster's purges, but the president's supporters aren't. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
No cops! No fascist!
No fascist USA!
No cops! No KKK!
No fascist USA!
No cops! No KKK!
No fascist USA!
No cops! No KKK!
No
fascist
USA! All right, that was in the spring. That was Antifa chanting, no cops, no KKK, no fascist USA. Of course, we know the damage they did there. We know the damage they did at the Republican, at the inaugural, how they flooded the streets and how they have been allowed wearing masks to do the damage that they have done is a mystery to me. Claire Lopez is my guest. Claire is the vice president for research and analysis for the Center for Security Policy. Yeah, she just left us for a second. We'll get it right back. And we're going to come back to our discussion of Antifa in just a second. Frank was just talking about Sebastian Gorka resigning from the Trump administration. That's another shocker. Happened over the weekend, and it's not good news. I have to tell you, with the departure of Steve Bannon, with the departure now of Sebastian and many of the others in the national security sphere, McMaster, who was Senator McCain's pick, hand-picked choice for the head of to lead the National Security Council, and leading it he is, boy. So I can tell you, we are in trouble as a country. We are definitely in trouble. Sebastian, by the way, wrote a very blunt resignation letter. You let me know when Claire's back, please. A very powerful resignation letter. And this is what he said. Given recent events, it's clear to me that forces that do not support the Make America Great Again promises are, for now, ascendant within the White House. As a result, the best and most effective way I can support you, Mr. President, is from outside the People's House. Regrettably, outside of yourself, the individuals who most embodied and represented the policies that will make America great again have been internally countered, systematically removed, or undermined in recent weeks. This was made patently obvious as I read the text of your speech on Afghanistan this week. And he goes on to talk about how he hears the voices of McMaster and others on the inside, the McCain voices on Afghanistan, and they are prevailing at this time, and the good men are being purged from the White House. But today our discussion is on Antifa, where a group of radicals wearing masks are seemingly unleashed on this country. Claire's back with us. Claire, before I ask you about Donald Trump, then that was the question I asked you before the break. You talked about the origins of this. I find myself wondering, who are these people behind the masks? Are these college students? Who are they? Are they wearing suits during the day, during their techie jobs in Oregon and Seattle, and then going out on the streets to do violence? Do we have any way of knowing who they are?
Well, certainly some are young people from campuses. Of course, as I mentioned before, there is the Campus Anti-Fascist Network, which is organized on campuses across the United States. But they're not all. As I mentioned before, there are other groups involved, like MoveOn.org and Occupy Wall Street, and some of the same street scum that we saw during those movements are now part of Antifa. And as I said, though, at the root of it are real hardcore Marxist-Leninist anarchist organizations. Again, the World Workers' Party, the Revolutionary Communist Party of the USA. These are not just kids. These are not just students. This is the core, the hardcore of the Communist Party and the Communist element in the United States. And what needs more investigation is what kind of direction or funding might be coming from other places overseas. Moscow, the Kremlin, question mark.
Yeah, or the Muslim world. You know, Chuck Todd interviewed a guy who was a professor from some East Coast university. I can't remember if it was Princeton, someplace like that. And he claimed to be one of the leaders of Antifa. I had never seen anyone appear and claim that, Claire. Do we know anything? Do they have a website? Do they have an address? Do we know anything about their organizational structure?
Well, as I said, it's an association of groups. So there's no, that I know of, unless it's the Kremlin, central address for them. But that each one of these other groups that do have websites and that do have long histories of actions in the United States are part of Antifa and come together and work with them. Now, at some level, of course, when you're going to organize something like this 10-day march on Washington, at that point, there's got to be, you know, senior leadership at some point putting this all together.
Yeah.
There's a lot more investigation that needs to be done, and we would hope to call on local law enforcement, the FBI, Homeland Security, and on up to the White House and the National Security Council to begin a serious investigation of Marxist-Leninist anarchists and communists in the United States.
You know, Claire, speaking of Charlottesville in particular, the organizer of the white supremacist so-called, or whatever they call it, Unite America, One America Now, something like that, was a guy named Jason Kessler. And we now know, of course, that he was Now, here, stay with me, folks. Jason Kessler was part of the Occupy Wall Street movement, which is not exactly known as a white supremacist group. And we also then know that that Antifa is associated with the Occupy Wall Street movement. So here's Jason Kessler posing as the organizer of this. We also know that he wrote for CNN. I have an article he wrote for CNN about the Occupy Wall Street movement. It's a strange, so CNN had a relationship with this Jason Kessler, who's supposedly this white supremacist, who what led these, 30 men. I'm not saying everyone in that group was innocent, or there's certainly, I'm not making a case for white supremacists by any means, but people have to understand that we are being played. And Claire, there is suspicion that this march leading to Washington is also going to be coinciding with another big protest. I know you're not prepared to talk about this, and I'll come back to this on another day. But there's another big protest being planned in Washington, sort of like supposedly our side, the people who love America, the people that want to secure borders. But the what we're finding out is that no one involved in that event is recognizable to any of us. So now we're beginning to wonder if we're not being set up for another huge collision organized by one side.
You're absolutely right, Sandy. I mean, you're nailing it right there. We are being manipulated. And if you look at what happened in Charlottesville, look at what happened in Berkeley yesterday, what you see is that groups that are supposedly and superficially against one another are being manipulated into confrontation. I mean, street fighting confrontation on the campuses, on the streets, while the police forces, the local police forces, in Charlottesville, in Berkeley, that should be keeping them apart and maintaining order, withdraw, step back. And not only step back, but in the case of Charlottesville, actually acted to funnel, to channel, and to force the original marchers, the ones who were not violent, the ones with a permit, vile though they be, the white supremacist Nazi groups, funnel and channel them straight into the Antifa forces who actually were violent and who did instigate the violence in Charlottesville. And then, after forcing them together, the police stepped back and let the fighting go on. This is manipulation. This is what is happening. And the answer must come from Washington, must come from Attorney General Jeff Sessions, but then the local law enforcement units have got to take responsibility for their own actions.
Yeah, let me interject a name here. The event, and then look, we're speculating right now, but I'm telling you, with the way things are unfolding, this makes sense to me. This rally that's supposedly being held in Washington on the Mall is called the Mother of All Rallies, and it's supposed to take place, I think, the 16th of September, and it's being advertised as a rally for people like us who love this country, want to support the president, but we don't recognize any of the organizers, none of the speakers, none of the names. And so many of us are beginning to smell a big fat rat, that there is a confrontation for D.C. being set up in the same way it was set up in Charlottesville. Now, Claire, my husband is a World War II buff. He is a walking encyclopedia, and he watches the the military channel, whatever it's called now, constantly.
Military history?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And they have a series on Hitler right now. They always have a lot of things on Hitler, but especially intense right now. So we were watching some of those, and, of course, Hitler was charismatic. He talked a lot about national identity and returning Germany to its greatness. And so it seems as though many people who really don't have much knowledge about Hitler beyond that are comparing Donald Trump to Adolf Hitler. What are the differences, might I ask?
Oh, the differences, of course, are immense. Being a strong supporter of national sovereignty, which, by the way, does not exist without strong and enforced borders, it's not the same thing as being a totalitarian, tyrannical ruler like Hitler, whose animus against the Jewish people led to the Holocaust and the murder of some 6 million Jews among many, many, many other innocent people. There is barely a superficial resemblance between the fascists of Nazi Germany and the president or the leadership of the United States. Fascism is essentially national control over industry and businesses in a tyrannical way. It is using the power of the central government to enforce inequality in the society, to enforce militarism, in fact, even against its own people, as Hitler did with the Jews. That's not what patriotic American loyalty is about in any way, shape, or form.
But let me just add also, world domination was what Hitler had in mind, and then they began war and trying to occupy territory, and there's nothing relating to that in Trump's proposal for this country. He just wants to restore the economy and bring some health back to and pride back to having being an American. I want us to close in this last couple of minutes going back to Antifa. Because I interrupted you. You said it began in 1920s Europe. We only have 2 minutes left. But again, tell us what that was like at the very beginnings, Claire, and what they were up to.
Okay, very quickly then. So we know that the Lenin's revolution in Russia took place in 1917, overthrew the monarchy in Russia. From there, communism arose. Lenin's communism. Actualized communism in Russia. As they began to spread that ideology, and of course, remember, this is the aftermath of World War I at this point, the Nazis are arising in Germany. And the two come to clash on the street, in particular in Germany, but also Italy and Spain particularly. The thugs in the street of communism and of fascism were fighting against one another. It is from those roots that we have today's neo-Nazis and the Marxist-Leninist anarchists that call themselves Antifa.
You wonder how much the people that actually belong to it understand that, Claire. You know, it reminds
me probably not most of them at all, I would expect.
I would expect you're right. You know, I think of my own experience of not being part of, but watching, observing firsthand the riots of the 60s and 70s and understanding that many people my age were drawn, you know, anti-nuclear, just wanted nuclear disarmament, wanted the war to end. And those were the reasons that they were involved with it. They had no idea that behind the scenes, communists were pulling the strings to create chaos in the streets. And the ultimate goal is what, Claire? Tell us again.
The ultimate goal, as per Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals and Al-Qaeda's 2004 essay, Management of Savagery, is the collapse of law and order in America, the collapse of American society. And out of such chaos, each side thinks, that is the Islamic terrorist side and the communist side, which are allied. They are together in this anarchist movement, but each thinks out of the chaos they can find advantage to impose their own agenda.
All right, well, that's just a primer. That's just the beginning of this conversation, Claire. And listen, as soon as you get something in writing, we're going to post this on our Facebook page so people can share it. But I appreciate so much always your expertise and sharing it with us. Claire Lopez of the Center for Security Policy. Thank you, Claire.
Thank you, Sandy.
Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.